Welcome to Second Chair. Business Second Chair carries a heavy weight, taking the vision, creating the roadmap to success of the business. Given the challenge these days, the second chair requires an expert, a coach, mentor, and instructor to lead all facets of the business to the destination. Each month, I'm your host, George Murray, and I select a business challenge and an operations professional, to discuss the challenges and provide the tools to be successful to overcome those obstacles. We remind our listeners that the discussion today is the perspective of our speakers and not of their organizations, and we are not sharing any detail or intellectual property of the organization of which they are a part of. Today, we are talking about finding the right candidate for your team and avoiding a bad hire. We want to welcome to the show Chris Ohlendorf. Chris is the Chief Operating Officer at Verseek and owner of Verseek Search and Consulting here in Minneapolis, but their reach is a little bit more than that. So, Chris, welcome to the show. We want to tell us, the viewers, just a little bit more about what Verseek does and their reach.
Sure, George. You know, we're based in Minneapolis, and you know, I think I've been in the business here for 25 years. Verseek's been around for 10 years. You know, we've done a lot of business in the upper Midwest and the Midwest. I think what we found over the last few years, especially when we went through the COVID epidemic, that, you know, we began to do a lot more out of the office and a lot more remote, and that pushed a lot of our clients to want more remote work. So, you know, we really are looking, you know, to fill positions that somebody could be sitting in Florida or Alaska, and we've done both and really pretty consistently. So we have an executive search business, which is, you know, figure permanent placement, somebody being hired to sit in a seat as a permanent employee. We also do a interim staffing business, mainly around HR and accounting and finance, that is, say you need somebody for a project that's, you know, 6 months or a year or whatever the case may be, you'd use our consultant versus having to hire somebody and then fire somebody when the project was over. So those are our two main staffing businesses. We also have a digital marketing business that caters to the staffing world. They're branded as Parka, and they do really social media, marketing automation, pay-per-click, SEO, really everything in the marketing suite geared towards staffing companies nationally. So I kind of get a full dose of staffing across the board.
Well, you know, based on the topic we're talking about, we're definitely talking to the right person. And we're appreciated that you take your time with us. So are you ready to sit in the second chair and answer a few questions, Chris?
Sounds good.
All right. So even with tech companies issuing layoffs, we're still in a strong economy market with unemployment rate, you know, just hovering nationally, probably about 3.5%. You know, there's 10.3 million jobs opening. So on an average, there's probably two jobs for every person out there unemployed. What are you finding companies are doing differently to ensure they get the right candidate to add to their team?
Well, you know, that's a great question, George. I think the, you know, that's really evolved in the last couple of decades since I've been in it. You know, I feel like 25 years ago, it was a much more simplistic, you know, unfortunately, much more transactional type of industry. You got a job, you make up a job description. We send you a few resumes, you do the interviews, you hire, and that was kind of about it. And, you know, with everything that's changed technologically over the last, you know, even 10 to 15 years, it's really changed dramatically. And I think the things that companies are doing differently, and if they're not, they should be doing differently, is really looking at their talent acquisition as a overall strategy. I mean, companies have, they've got marketing strategies, they got revenue strategies, they've all different product strategies. A lot of companies never looked at it that way with talent, and it's really become something where they need to sit down and take a look at that. And it, when I talk about a strategy, I usually break it down into three areas. And it, when I used to talk about this even 5 years ago, I didn't talk about all three of these areas probably as passionately as I do now, but it becomes so imperative to really have a well-rounded program that I spent a lot more time on it. I think the number one thing, and we probably always talked about it, is how are you attracting So number one thing is the attraction of the candidates. And this is, you know, it used to be, hey, you know, we got Donut Friday or whatever, and that was about it. Now it's, you know, people are asking some just incredible questions in the interview process. You know, they want to know about a company's leadership. You know, what is their vision? They want to know about the company's strategy, at least on a base level, and, you know, what is the mission behind that? They're asking questions about culture and values. You know, comp and benefits was always a staple, but now they're getting into market comparisons and the intangibles to that comp and benefits package rather than just, hey, here's my salary and bonus. And then really they want to know about the management team. They want to know about the product. So it's a much more educated candidate, in my opinion, than it was, you know, even, you know, 3-4 years ago. So those are, you know, that's kind of category number one in the attraction. You need to have your team on the same page and talking the same language. You don't want somebody coming in and asking a question to the first interviewee or interviewer and getting a completely different answer than the second one. So number two in that strategy would be hiring practices. And I've often said there is no silver bullet in hiring practices, but the fact of the matter is it's become even more widespread here lately. You have to be doing really, in my opinion, a piece of kind of what I call all the above. And all the above is, you know, LinkedIn is probably the best tool I've seen as a recruiter in my entire history. So there are LinkedIn programs that help people get candidates into the queue. You know, some of the aggregators, Indeed is probably the latest example. There's been many over the last probably 15 years, way back to monster.com was kind of the first big one. And, you know, they ebb and flow. LinkedIn is kind of hot right now, but that's one of the, all the above that I'm mentioning. Social media, you know, people want to see how you show up outside. This was something that I had a hard time getting my hands around. I'm not a huge social media guy. I probably wouldn't be on Facebook if I didn't own a company, but the fact of the matter is people are on there and they're looking and they're commenting and seeing what people are doing out in the community, not only with their business and products, but how they show up in the community. Career fairs, they're happening all the time, especially on the lower end when you're trying to bring in some more junior people that you may have to train. You know, that's an area that companies need to get more deeply involved in. Internal referral programs. I mean, this used to be, hey, you help me get a candidate in, I'll give you $100 gift cards. We got companies giving $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 to somebody for internal referrals. And we do the same here. I mean, if somebody's paying one of our fees or they don't have to pay the fee, and I know not everybody wants to pay a fee. Probably nobody actually wants to pay it, but you know, they have to in certain circumstances. But if they can get quality, and I think a lot of times when you run those referral programs, you're getting referrals from some of your best employees. So not only do you have somebody who you trust is already there doing a great job, you get to reward them with $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, even if it's $1,000, you're bringing in kind of at least a known commodity through a great worker. So those are really, really valuable. And then, you know, obviously staffing firms. I could talk all day on staffing firms, but as part of the total strategy, you know, a staffing firm's got to be part of it, you know, especially for some of the key, key hires. You know, and thirdly, and I think this is probably, you know, the one that's getting more press than it ever has and probably should have been the leading thing way back when is retention. Mm. You know, this has got to be part of the strategy. And, you know, part of that is, you know, when they walk through the door and, you know, we'll probably end up talking about onboarding before this session's over. But, you know, somebody setting clear expectations the day they come through the door, you know, making sure people are set up to do what they do best and not bogged down with things they aren't good at. I mean, I've seen that time and time again where we take somebody internally here and they're fantastic at something and they might, you know, they might be horrible at something else, but you know, you take the horrible away and, you know, emphasize this and it's just, they're happier and more productive. And it's, you know, it's a big part of retention. You know, make sure people are heard. You know, they, people want to be on a team where everybody's committed to doing good work, being surrounded by that. And then obviously pay and benefits are always a factor, but, you know, not the whole picture. So, yeah, that's really kind of long-winded answer there, but that's really the three categories that are part of a really good talent acquisition strategy.
Yeah, that's quite a bit, but you know, it's a very competitive market out there. You know, on Verseek's website, you have this talent activation process, or TAP. Can you help our listeners define what that is without giving away the secret sauce?
You know, George, I think it's pretty simple. I think, you know, one of the things that we do, and I think we really pride ourselves, have been doing it for a long time, is when we get into the initial conversations with our client, you know, we're trying to find their core values, their missions, and really what sets it apart. I always tell potential clients, we've got hundreds of thousands of candidates in our database. You know, you give me a job description, I can go in and put in some keywords, and I pull out 10 resumes that kind of fit what you're talking about. But to me, you know, that might have used to been, or used to be 75% of the whole deal. Now it's probably 30%. I mean, all the intangibles about how people fit into the company are really a bigger deal. So I think up front, that's part of, you know, our keys to success with clients is really understanding that core value alignment, and then the job fit, looking at their job description. And then, you know, things, potential for advancement, things like that. Once we put that all together, you know, we're going to end up helping a company hire somebody who's a high performer and who has high job satisfaction. And that's a great equation.
Yeah, you stated it in the earlier question. You know, I can tell you, in the last probably a little less than a decade, I have found a lot of the candidates interviewing me more about the jobs that we've had open, vice versa, than we interviewing them.
Right.
You know, to your point, you know, asking about the culture, what kind of manager, what's, you know, what do they like? You know, what do they dislike? You know, what do they like on a Friday? What do they like on a Monday? I mean, these are real questions that get asked.
Right.
Chris, what do you feel the best businesses are doing in their overall hiring process better than their competitors?
Well, you know, I guess I just got on my soapbox about the talent strategy, but, you know, but a couple of things that I see the better companies do is they are really engaged in listening to their employees. And they, you know, some of those things I talked about in the strategy, you know, they're really in tune with what's going on. Another piece that I think loses part of the, spotlight is speed to market. I mean, I think some companies used to take it as a badge of honor that it's, hey, you're going to meet 14 people and it's going to take 60 days. And that does not fly. Can't do it anymore. You have to figure out who they need to meet. They need to meet them as expediently as possible. And you need to be able to make a really solid decision. I think the other thing that companies are really starting to take a look at, and this, when I talked about retention before, is when you're trying to do all these things, one of the things that can get lost in the whole process is you may have somebody that's been there 6, 7, 10 years and they're engaged and they're productive. But, you know, however your process may have gone over, and if you look at, you know, just, you know, the indexes the last couple of years on how the, you know, costs have risen in the economy. I mean, salaries have gone up dramatically in the last couple of years. And you may have one of your best employees sitting there that have gone through the process. Well, you're bringing in outside talent, you got to pay them this to get them. Somebody's over there and they're underpaid and they're in your top 10 employees. So companies really making sure that they, you know, take stock in what they have and make sure that they're keeping people up to market internally. And sometimes that means, hey, we may be doing some sort of percentage increase, but for that person, they're top 10 here and you know, they fell through the cracks and we got to do a little shock and awe with their raise this time.
Do you find a lot of companies making a big miss in that, where they've got, you know, they're hiring all these folks and they're missing their 2 or 3 star employees that have been there for 10 years and they haven't really kept them with market?
I do. Yeah, I see that all the time. And I'm involved in some executive peer groups. So I sit down with business owners all the time. And anytime staffing questions come up, everybody's looking at me. And that's something I've really drilled down. I just had a conversation last week with a bunch of business owners talking about that. You know, they're like, hey, you know, what do you think we should do for, you know, across the board, you know, raises for the year? And I'm like, I go, you know, you do what you normally do and then take a look at the indexes. But I think you need to go down your list of people and say, has anybody slipped through the cracks?
No, absolutely. You know, there's a quote, Chris, that Jillian Ennick has a quote out there. Your employee brand is never what you say it is. It's what your employees and candidates say it is. Have you found yourself helping businesses more than just recruiting? And what are the top three things you have helped them with, if you have?
You know, I'm overlapping a little bit, but certainly, in my opinion, one of the biggest evolutions in our business is we've really become more of a partner than a, you know, just doing a transaction with them. And that's really, it's part of our whole infrastructure, what we're trying to do. We don't want to be a transactional business partner. We want to be in and be helping with decisions that are integral to their growth. And, you know, I think that if I said three things that fit, I already talked about retention, and that's one of them. I feel like I've been really beating that drum the last year or so, and people are pretty receptive, but it's kind of amazing to me of the looks I get sometimes, like, oh yeah, we haven't really done that. And I'm like, well, you know, like today, do it today, start the list. And then the other thing, I alluded to it for a second in earlier, but what are you doing to home grow talent? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I know internally here at Verseek, we were, you know, we had kind of a strategy that surrounded hiring industry vets, and we really lost sight of how we could home grow. We weren't really set up all of a sudden to have the mentorship and the training to bring somebody in and bring them up. So, you know, we kind of instituted a new program. You know, Steve Yakish, who runs our executive search business, put that together. And that's been really, really valuable to be able to take some people that, you know, we normally wouldn't have been be able to put into the food chain and be able to get them some base level training. So that's something I'm really asking people about and seeing what they're doing out there. And then, you know, we do a tremendous amount of comp and benefits consulting. I mean, we have an HR consulting business, and the demand for our consultants that are experts in comp and benefits packages has been tremendous. And, you know, people just, I mean, it's getting crazy out there. People sometimes just don't know what to do and they need some help. So we do a lot of that.
Big shout out to Steve Yakish. I know Steve for probably at least 4 or 5 years. Great guy too. You know, shifting gears for a minute here, Chris, you know, Career Builder survey found a price tag of $25,000 or higher that is attributed to making a single bad hire by 41% of the companies. So what do companies need to do differently to ensure they reduce the risk of a bad hire?
Well, you know, first of all, I think 25 is low. I mean, a bad hire can be, I mean, even money aside, everything that it touches from just morale and things like that. You know, there's so many non-dollar figures that, yeah, it's making a bad hire is a big deal. Yeah, I think, first of all, you know, people need to understand they can't compromise. You know, I think so. Yeah, I already, you know, pontificated, hey, you got to speed it up, but not at the expense of making a bad hire. You know, if you're sitting there and it's like, well, we really need to fill this, this person isn't quite right, I say don't hire them. And, you know, that may hurt in the short term, but, you know, we're already talking about the cost of a bad hire, and it's way worse to make the bad hire than to delay it and make sure you do it right. I think, you know, we get people coming to us and they say, hey, you know, here's our job description. Can you help us kind of see where we stand in the marketplace? We want these 10 things and we want to pay X. And, you know, usually at first blush, we get that and we'll say, and it's always kind of funny, George, because we don't, you know, sometimes people have this, hey, they're recruiters and their fees based upon the, you know, the salary. So they want the highest salary. You know, that's really not how our brains work. Our brains work because we want the best fit. So the person stays there and they come back to our business every time. And so, but we don't dictate the market salaries. We are a product of the market salaries. So, you know, if somebody says, hey, these 10 things, X amount, and we say, hey, the market doesn't really bear that. You know, if you want to pay this, you probably get 6 of those things. And if 6 is okay, figure out which 6 you have, and that's what we'll go find. And I think that's what I'm talking about, you know, not compromising. I think making sure you understand, you know, really what's non-negotiable. I have to have this. And, you know, we can help people figure out what that's going to cost. And some people say, hey, no, I have to have 10 out of 10. And we may say, you got to have 10 out of 10. It's X plus, you know, $15,000 or whatever the case may be. But that's, you know, that's what I, you know, you need to start with when you're trying not to make a bad hire, is really be committed to what it is you need.
Good point. It's interesting you use the number six. I actually reference, and I've said this quite a bit throughout my career, is I'd rather work and develop a SEAL Team 6 than a Dirty Dozen any day of the week, because SEAL Team 6 is cross-functionally and cross-trained and highly functional. You know, the Dirty Dozen, you take out the sharpshooter and you're basically, you know, no one else is trained, right? And so the same philosophy applies in business as well. Let me see here. Make sure I'm getting on the next question here. How do companies that make a bad hire recover?
Boy, the first thing I'd say on that, George, is act quickly. I mean, I think most of the time, you know, a bad hire doesn't sneak up on you. I guess it could, but most of the time, you know, it's coming and it's kind of coming like a freight train. And a lot of companies do what I call allowing somebody to die a long, slow, painful, team-killing death. You know, it's they're going to go anyway. They may quit on their own, but instead of 120 days, it's a year. And that's a painful year with a bad hire. Everybody's picking up the slack. Everybody's looking at the management going, why aren't you doing something? So acting quickly is imperative. And sometimes, you know, you got egg on your face. Hey, we thought we made a great hire and we didn't. But the respect you get for fixing it quickly is better than letting it slide. Because I can tell you from my experience, the times where you let it go because, you know, hope beyond hope, it corrects itself. You know, I could probably say I've seen a time or two in my career, but I've seen a heck of a lot of them that haven't. So. And I think also owning up to it with current staff, you know, you made a mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. Own up to it. And, you know, most importantly, do everything in your power not to repeat it.
No, good points. You know, there's a great book out there, The First 90 Days by Michael Watkins, Proven Strategies for Getting Up to Speed Faster and Smarter, aptly dubbed the Onboarding Bible by The Economist. When you are working with a client and they agree on a candidate of yours, What is it that you recommend for them to have successfully onboarding a process?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm hoping they have an onboarding process. And I'm not completely kidding there. I've seen some that are so haphazard. It's very, very frustrating. You know, number one, you need to make sure the, there's one person accountable for whatever the onboarding is. Obviously, there's going to be more than one person involved in the process, but one person needs to be accountable. If a bunch of people are accountable, nobody is. And, you know, you'd be surprised how many people start. And I've heard, I don't even know who my manager is. You know, early in the process, unscheduled time, they're sitting around, they don't know what to do, and nobody's telling them what to do. Expected to lead their own training. These are things that I've heard. So, you know, make it easy. Communicate often. Those are the things. But put somebody in charge. And, you know, I remember we used to have a, you know, one of the tasks we had people do were, you know, calling up candidates and doing updates. Got people talking our logo, and it's kind of the early thing. And, you know, the day we loaded those into people's Outlook and computer systems, so they literally just sat down and when it was that part of the training, all they had to do was click and call, and they, you know, were beginning that process. It's like, you know, it's not genius here, but, you know, in the old days, it would be like a pile of paper on their desk and somebody had to help them weed through it. And so, you know, the easier it is, the better.
No, agreed. Chris, Robert Half has a quote out there. Time spent on hiring is time well spent. Of the entire process, which part of the process is the most important and the most companies get wrong?
You know, I'm probably, you know, beating the drum here, but I think, you know, what I've seen, George, is really the miss of not having an overall strategy. I talked about attraction. I talked about process. I talked about retention. And nobody has none of that. I mean, I hope nobody has none of that. Some people may be great at pieces of it, but you know, the real miss is not having the whole process mapped out and make as important of a strategy as your sales strategy, your marketing strategy, product, whatever the case may be. Otherwise, it ends up being a bunch of misaligned parts.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you for both your time and insight while in the second chair, and thank you for leading others to success and helping companies get the best talent. We're going to put you in the studio, and we're going to turn around and recognize our sponsors, and we'll get back to you.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. So there you have it, both on hiring the best talent and what to do when you actually have a bad hire. I suggest reaching out to Chris and the VerSeek staff if you are having challenges with hiring your staff or hiring, filling in positions. Just want to let you know that we are sponsored by Global HR Research Solutions, including general screening, drug and health screening, identifying biometrics, onboarding, monitoring services. Global HR Research helps customers easily define, streamline, and optimize their employment screening processes to be more immediate, personalized, and trustworthy. They are better by every measure, as highlighted within their three pillars, which are better data, better technology, and better teams. 100% US-based proprietary technology plus a team committed to customer excellence. We are also sponsored by my second book, Ignite, Engage, Retain. My second book, where I ask leaders and business owners if you could ignite your workforce, engage your team or your company, and retain all your talent, how much more productive and great your culture might have. This book will help you get there, available in Kindle, Amazon, and also on Audible. We want to thank Chris for taking time today and sitting with us in the second chair and helping both leaders and business owners go from where they are to where they want to be. Join us next time where we sit with another chief operating officer and tackle two more topics that are timely in this industry today.